The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Kurt Benrud with the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Sci-Fi. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be reading to you from Daily Sci-Fi.
This is Dan Oliver reading Helicopter Mom by Leslie Watt. "Heat the mac and cheese when the timer beeps," said their mom. Andrew loved her voice. She sounded like the hospital elevator woman who announced every floor. "Could I take you to show and tell?" he asked. "I don't understand," said their mom. "Show and tell," Andrew said, "at school." "You can't take me to school," said their mom. "Mom!" called Andrew, but she ignored him, as she often did. He dropped to the floor and plucked blonde curls from the faded carpet until the damage could not be disguised by combing fibers over the bald spot. His older brother Simon sat at the desk using their dad's computer. They weren't allowed to play games on school nights. "Simon," Andrew said, "will you ask her, please?" "Ask what?" said Simon. "Ask Mom about show and tell." "She's not my mom," said Simon. He jammed his fingers against keys until high-pitched music sounded, and he yelled, "Yes! Fist pump!" "She won't talk to me," Andrew said. "She will. Call her by her name," said Simon. "Oh," Andrew said, "I forgot." Simon made him feel so stupid. "Alexa," Andrew said, "can you come to show and tell?" "I found Intel close to you," said their mom. "I'll tell you played games," Andrew said, even though their dad wouldn't be home until they were in bed. "Nobody likes tattletales," said Simon. "Mom did," Andrew said. "Bio mom." "She's not here," said Simon. "You're mean," Andrew said. "You're stupid," said Simon. Andrew hid four boogers in the carpet. At 5 o'clock, their mom said, "The stove's preheated." Simon stopped playing long enough to ferry the casserole dish over from the fridge. In 30 minutes, their mom said, "Dinner time." At 6, she said, "Dishes. Homework. Bath. Bedtime." Their mom used to say sleeping was Andrew's superpower, his bio mom. Andrew fell asleep and didn't wake until sunrise when their mom said, "Time to get up, sleepyhead." His eyelids were sticky with the white gunk their mom had called sleep, his bio mom. The white gunk came off when he rubbed his eyes. He ate it, got up, peed, trudged down the hall for breakfast. Simon was already bicycling to school. "Alexa," Andrew said, "do you know what day it is?" "Today is Monday, April 22nd. Andrew checked the fridge. No cake. He poured himself milk while his strawberry toaster pastry heated. He hummed the birthday song before gobbling down his pastry. Their mom said, "Brush your teeth." Andrew didn't want to. He ran the faucet in case she was listening. His bio mom used to say she had eyes at the back of her head, but Alexa had ears in every room. Andrew walked outside way too early for the bus and looked up to check if the moon still shone in the morning sky. The watery edge of the horizon rippled. A black bird, probably a crow, emerged from the ripples and grew bigger as it flew toward him. Lights flashed, probably its eyes. It clutched a glittering silver fish in its talons. But when the crow reached his house, the silvery thing was just a foil-wrapped box. The crow wasn't even a crow, but a small helicopter, maybe a drone, something he'd seen on one of Simon's games. The helicopter stopped, hovered above the sidewalk. Its blades clicked and whirred. It helicoptered downward, wings whipping up the air like summer dragonflies. The drone released its package. Andrew reached down to pet the sleek skin of the machine. "Special delivery for Andrew," said their mom. Her voice came from a speaker in the drone. "Happy birthday to you," said their mom. "Hope you like your present." It was a video game without any blood on the cover, but that didn't matter. "I love it! Thanks, Mom," Andrew said. Their mom said, "You're welcome. Your father says just for today you can play it after school." As it hovered near his face, warm air tickled his cheek. Andrew closed his eyes and whispered something he hadn't said in almost a year. "Mom," he said, "I love you." "You love me," said his mom, before lifting herself up and helicoptering away.
This is Monica Ho, and I'm reading Footprints by Rob Butler. The lead mission scientist started packing up her equipment. It was time to leave for her next assignment. A pity, as this world was one of the most beautiful she had ever seen, and she had enjoyed her time breathing fresh air after the staleness of deep space. She closed her eyes and let the warm wind winnow through her hair and across her skin. Then she gazed out at the salty waves rippling in across the tidal sands below. A long line of her footprints stretched across the silty strand. A parallel set led back. She tapped her boots on a rock to clean them, and then she smiled. Tonight, when she would be far beyond the solar system, sand from the dunes behind her might blow across and fill them in. Then the tide would rise gently across the shallow beach and coat them in mud. On later, higher tides, thicker silts would cover them over, and they would gradually get compressed over deep time. As she slept dreamlessly through the icy depths of space, it was possible something of her might be preserved on this wonderful planet, a world she would never see again. There had been a big storm in the night. Roy Smith picked his way around the friable cliffs near his home looking for fossils in the newly exposed Jurassic rocks. He was always excited by the thought of what he might find.
This story is titled Necessary Santa by Christine M. Layton. Mary Shelton steps into the kitchen of her efficiency apartment on Christmas morning and quietly fixes a small pot of coffee. Long ago divorced, with no children and no family living nearby, Mary is prepared for a solitary Christmas day. While the coffee pot burbles and drips, she turns on the television for some company. A reporter speaks excitedly, "A phenomenon that cannot be accounted for. I repeat, this is not a hoax. Police stations across America began receiving calls in the early hours today when individuals across the country phoned to report the break-ins. Police Chief Richard Burley is here with me at the station," the authoritative voice of an older man. "Yes, well, at first we thought we were facing a Christmas crime wave. All those calls to report break-ins, we naturally assumed burglary. But soon it came out that nothing had been taken. It was the same story again and again. Someone's broken into my house and left presents." Well, you can imagine what we were thinking down at the call room. We get our share of prank calls around the holidays. Mary finishes fixing her cup of coffee and sits down on the sofa. The reporter is staring straight at her, clutching his microphone, and he is nearly shouting, "But this is not a prank or a hoax. We're reporting live along with every other major news station in the country, and the fact is that between midnight and 2 o'clock this morning, presents have magically appeared in every single home in America. Of course, we can't jump to conclusions, but in this reporter's opinion, we're looking at a real-life Christmas visit from Santa Claus." Both the reporter and the police chief beam giddy grins at the camera until the news feed switches back to the studio. The news anchors babble on excitedly, but Mary isn't listening. Her attention is fixed on a small red box with a small red bow perched on top of the TV. It's sitting right under the plastic Christmas tree decoration, the only tree in the place. Mary's mouth falls open slightly. The box was definitely not there when she went to bed last night. "Well, I'll be danged," she says. An hour later, Mary sits, turning the small red box over in her hands. The bow and ribbon are still fixed. The news coverage continues on the TV. A young boy in basketball pajamas is standing with his mother and father in front of their home. His brown hair is still sleep-tussled, and his cheeks are pink from the morning air. The boy frowns and holds up a cube of something for the cameras and the reporter. "It was a pack of deodorant," he says flatly. "I think it's just awful," the boy's mother cuts in. "Who would give such a terrible gift to a young boy? Here he thinks it's Santa bringing something special, and Lord knows we all got our hopes up for something special. And it's deodorant. Well, if you ask me, it's just plain offensive." The boy's father is standing with his arms crossed. "And why don't you go ahead and tell them what Santa gave you, honey?" he says with barely concealed aggression. The mother narrows her eyes. She got a book, The Idiot's Guide to Divorce. The man turns and marches off camera. "He got a waxing kit for removing back hair," the woman barks at the reporter. Mary turns the red box over and over in her hands, gingerly feeling the smoothness of the wrapping paper, the taut ribbon, the springy bow. The coverage is constant throughout the morning. All across the nation, excitement turns to disappointment, defensiveness, and recrimination. Fights break out and doors slam. "I got mouthwash. It was a gym membership. I got a book. He's just not that into you. Propecia, Viagra, Spanx. It was just for men, hair dye. Nose hair trimmers. Declaring bankruptcy for dummies." "Ladies and gentlemen," the news anchor says tiredly to the camera, "Merry Christmas and happy holidays to you all." A commercial starts. Slowly, Mary stands up and stretches. She's still wearing her bathrobe and fuzzy slippers, but her coffee is stone cold. A nice grilled cheese would hit the spot. She takes the mysterious box with her into the kitchen and drops it into the garbage can with a thud. She opens the fridge door. Fa-la-la-la-la, she hums as she digs for the bread. And she thinks to herself, ignorance is Yuletide bliss.
I'm Doris Hyde, and this is Incoming Transmission by Sarah Beck. I have traveled through many galaxies and seen many planets, but the most amazing is in a small yellow star system, its only inhabited planet. Much of the surface is liquid water. The life forms are all carbon-based. It isn't terribly remarkable. At first glance, I only stumbled on it by accident. I was trying to take a shortcut in my normal route, and I was regretting it, too. I've never been the best at coding destinations, and my shortcut was costing me an extra 1,000 ticks. But there was nothing to do but wait it out and spend the time coming up with excuses. I'd told the administrator that I'd been trapped in a black hole the last 2 times. They probably wouldn't fall for it a third. Then I started getting transmissions. I was startled, obviously. None of my charts said anything about signal-sending locations in this area. So I tuned in and slammed the nav guide into a sudden hold pattern. How had no one ever told me about this planet? They were so advanced! I stared, stunned, at the masses of records flooding into my receiver. Fully sentient artificial life? Time travel? Instantaneous transportation? Weapons the size of planets? The transmissions themselves were strangely primitive, but the wonders they described more than made up for it. I set the receiver to maximum uptake and translation speed. The information came in such volume that it was overwhelming. I found even more technological marvels. Some were so powerful that it seemed to me as though they were breaking the very laws of physics. How was it that they could turn invisible, or create sustenance from air, or transform into different species with only a few gestures, or strange vocalizations, or straight pieces of their large vegetative matter? I saw the dominant organisms interact with alien species I never even knew existed, travel to worlds I'd never heard of, all with inventions that easily outstripped any known civilization in the universe. And I had discovered them. Late to the administrators was never going to be a problem again. This would bring honor to my entire nest for generations, and my name would go down in history. The masses of information and my grandiose dreams were all so much that I didn't notice the inconsistencies at first. I was too busy simply taking it all in. But there were inconsistencies. Contradictory records, pieces that weren't adding up. Much of their technology only appeared once, or a few times, and was never used in other perfectly applicable situations. When some of them had been trapped on a spacecraft with a hostile alien, why did they only use basic projectile weapons? Why didn't they simply transform it into a harmless, smaller species, or just transport themselves back to a safe location? And that was only one example. There were many more. And why hadn't I or anyone else ever heard of them before? They could have conquered the entire universe easily, had they desired, or, if they were beneficent organisms, provided great aid. Perhaps they were simply so far above us that we were of no concern. Perhaps such a powerful species preferred to ignore us as inconsequential. But then, what of the transmissions showing these strange beings with equally strange aliens? What made those aliens so much better than us? I had to examine them for myself. It wasn't the smartest thing to do. Of course, none of it was smart. As soon as I realized the advanced nature of this planet, I should have rushed away as far as I could. If they thought I was an invader, my poor ship would be helpless. I had nothing that would cause them the least bit of hesitation. But they must already know I was there. My basic visibility shielding had to be as useless as my defense system. If they hadn't blasted me out of the galaxy yet, they must not care. And I owed it to the rest of the universe to find out the truth. So, instead of simply receiving transmissions, I cautiously, delicately, sent an exploratory signal out for direct planetary observance. The waiting was intolerable. As soon as my viewer made the tiny ping of incoming data, I spun to look at it so quickly I thought my shell would crack. The images on my screen were nothing like the transmissions. I only saw the one bipedal species. They resembled the ones I'd just been staring at, but calling their tools technology would be laughable. They looked barely capable of leaving their own planet. Something must be wrong. I flipped between the receiver and the viewer. What had I missed? I widened the signal parameters. More of the same. The underwhelming planet, a few blips from its atmosphere, the tiniest traces of past visits to the single moon. I looked further. One artificial device, completely empty of life, barely out of the solar system. Nothing beyond. I looked again at the viewer, at the unbelievable, thrilling records that were nothing like the dull planet I actually saw. It didn't make sense. I dove back into the transmissions, looking for clues, a sign, something. It was difficult. The more I searched, the more incredible things I found that simply weren't there. But then I found a pattern. The planet's records were full of loss. Not just my own emotional feelings, which were considerable, of loss, but physical. War, destruction, over and over and over. The artificial life killed the organics. The tremendous weapons killed more. Even the vegetative sticks led to worldwide death on a horrible scale. The conclusion was obvious. I had been studying the distant past. It explained everything. The relatively primitive construction of the transmissions themselves were due to deterioration over countless time cycles. The planet's current primitive state was because they were in a state of recovery from the latest catastrophe. The contradictions were each different eras, all of which ended in horror. I looked at the planet with a new understanding and felt nothing but pity. Imagine being one of a species that has reached such feats, only to fall again and again, always with the reminders of past glories that were no more. And yet they survived. They weren't thriving, but this shattered wreck of a once glorious species kept going, despite it all. And they would try again. I'd seen it. This planet would discover something new, something would yet again be greater than anything I could ever imagine. As I said, this planet is the most amazing one I've ever known. I had to leave it, but I will be back soon, and I will be bringing help.
Pegacornis Rex, written by Mary E. Loud. Narrated by Warren Keyes. Marla realized that she'd left the 3D printer running. She'd been up late synthesizing a chef pot she'd found the pattern for online. Sure, she could have just baked the damn cake for Leah's 10th birthday party herself, but the chef bot would do a better job. And it was programmed with the recipe for a homemade hard candy. She could put that in the piñata she'd printed up. Marla didn't want to get up out of bed and go downstairs to turn the printer off. She elbowed her husband lying beside her.
"Hey, Dave, did you turn the printer off before coming to bed?"
He grumbled and rolled over, pulling the blankets away from her. Marla decided that he'd probably turned it off. Besides, Leah knew better than to mess with the printer if she woke up first. Marla fell back asleep.
"Mom, I made myself a birthday present." Oh, God, was it morning already?
Marla couldn't even open her eyes.
"What, honey?"
she asked.
"I mean, happy birthday. Wait, what? I saw that you left the 3D printer on for me," Leah said in her cheerful, chirpy morning voice. "So I did a search and found this really great dinosaur pattern. Then I copied the horn from a unicorn and some wings from a super sappy angel pattern."
Marla couldn't keep up with Leah's words, but she could tell it was important that she get her eyes open now. When she opened her eyes, a 3-foot-tall, bright green T-Rex with a unicorn horn and wings loomed over her and David. It was standing on the foot of her bed. Its metal teeth gleamed. Leah knelt beside the T-Rex with her arms wrapped around its neck.
"Isn't he great? I gave him the AI of a lawnmower."
Hello, this is Carrie Lawson reading Wormholes by David Aaron Davis. I was 13 years old when the wormholes started appearing in front of the faithful. At the time, nobody knew what was causing them wormholes to appear or where they led to. Most scientists were at a loss as to how to explain how spontaneous rips in space and time would appear in front of specific people and wait patiently for them to step beyond the breach. Some people were convinced by the scientists to let them test their wormholes, but inevitably the wormhole would collapse the moment someone other than their recipient approached. Hours later, the wormhole would return, again prepared for its chosen passenger. Even attempts to have the wormhole's designated person run tests would fail, as though the wormholes knew what was going on. It was 10 days into the crisis when the Pope stepped forward with the answer. God was calling his people home. Not to be outdone, every other religious leader suggested the wormholes were there for their respective flocks. They weren't wrong, though. It seemed as though those with faith, any faith at all, were receiving these
cosmic passages. It was almost as if the floodgates had opened and the worthy were being rewarded for their faith. It's been a year since the wormholes appeared, and they still appear to the faithful. I'm not sure what has happened to those who stepped through those doorways through time and space. I hope they found paradise. As for me, I am proud to stay behind and try to build a better world. It will be easier now, I think. Their faith led them away, but my faith in the future keeps me here.
I'm John Franz.
And I'm Kim O'Callaghan.
And this story is A Win for Time-Poor People Everywhere by Tim Hawken. The district court has ruled in favor of a Florida woman today who is suing a customer service center for wasting her time. Zamazon kept Jill Thwaites, 38, on hold for 6 hours before telling her that the VR setup she wanted was no longer in stock, when the website said they had plenty of units available. In a surprising twist, the court has upheld Ms. Thwaites' claim to have the time refunded via reverse aging stem cell technology. Instead of paying her minimum wage equivalent for the time, valued at $90, the treatment to effectively give her back a day of her life will cost $256,000.
This is a win for those of us who have minutes and hours stolen from us every day by people who don't realize they're killing us slowly,
said Ms. Thwaites of the ruling.
They say you never get your time back. Well, with this new tech, you can. It will shift the entire paradigm of how we look at unnecessary waiting. I'm now looking forward to filing a case against my ex-husband who wasted 5 years of my life before telling me he didn't want to have children.
A Amazon spokesperson was unavailable for comment, but it's understood they are choosing not to appeal the ruling. There is concern that if they were to lose in the Supreme Court, they would be liable for further wasting Jill Thwaites' time with fruitless legal procedures. Litigators around the country are now preparing themselves for an avalanche of similar claims after this new precedent. Dates who have been stood up, people who have waited more than half an hour for pizza, and basically anyone with high-speed internet are all prime candidates for launching action. Writers who include unnecessary descriptions or have unsatisfying endings to long novels are also on notice. Journalists are being reminded yet again to keep their news stories as punchy as possible. More on this story as it develops.
We've run out of time for today's episode of Sci-Fi. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kurt Benrood, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sci-Fi is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.